people are kind of uncomfortably hesitating or perched. Do you want to just take a few minutes? Okay, just to say a big thank you again to the writers for extremely powerful readings. And I think one thing that came out of all of those readings was just how urgent and declamatory that voice needs to be at times. But also, on the other hand, you know, the ordinariness, the everydayness, the kind of inside and nowness of different lives. We're going to move on now to the kind of discussion part of the evening, and I'm very happy to be able to welcome two very prominent scholars who work in the area of Caribbean writing, and in particularly sexuality, Professor Faith Smith from Brandeis University and Professor Pat Saunders from the University of Miami. And they're just going to say a few words in response to the readings, and then we'll open up the floor to discussion. Thank you.
Hello, everybody. I'm Faith Smith, and I just wanted to respond to the readings, and I may or may not turn them into questions that you may or may not want to answer before Pat speaks, and then we turn it over to the audience. So one thing to say would be that Unia's reading from Buxton Spice, and now I have to add Thomas's last reading, for me are uncomfortable and shocking. And certainly when my students and I have read Buxton Spice, they're, you know, we're uncomfortable. I mean, I like to think they're uncomfortable too, but maybe it's just me. And it reminds me that these texts interrupt the silences of the nationalist novel. These texts interrupt the narrative of respectability. So on the one hand, it seems to me Unia Kempadu's text, Thomas Glave's text, Beanie Man's text, right, all disrupt this silence of respectability. Sex is not only respectable. Sex is violent. Sometimes violence is pleasurable. This is all messy. Desire is messy. On the other hand, Beanie Man and middle-class nationalists and the church speak with one voice on some things. So that the business of the novel and literature as the antidote to what Beanie Man is saying, I want to push back on that a little bit, and I don't know if you want to say anything about that. And then I was struck by Thomas reading from the Bahamian activist, this business about what do you want? And a part of the catalog of that list was Bahamian decolonization and freedom being linked to that. And of course, then that reminded me of Jackie Alexander's critique, always a kind of multi-pronged critique, both of the ways in which Caribbean people need to be more self-conscious about how we have been restrictive in terms of the range of possible desires, but always for her too, the critique of queer activism, queer international activism, queer metropolitan activism, which does not interrogate its own imperialism. So that was very interesting to me, that the catalog of what a Bahamian activist critiquing Bahamian homophobia wants is also decolonization for the Bahamas. Unia says, I didn't want to romanticize or sanitize. And so, again, the respectability narrative is being critiqued in different kinds of ways. And so writers as an antidote to that is something that we have to speak, because there are different ways to break sexual silences, and this is being done in contradictory ways. Then finally, this business of the film and representation is very interesting to me, because it seems to me that film raises the stakes in all kinds of ways. There's a history of the representation of non-white people and the cinema. And on the one hand, the cinema is supposed to bear the burden of respectability and vindication for brown people. So we go to the film to solve a history of how we are treated in the world, but how the past has treated us on the celluloid. And so on the one hand, there's that. So in that sense, the film, we sometimes ask of film that it should cure all kinds of things, and therefore that ties us into a respectability narrative. On the other hand, the history of film is that Caribbean / paradise / sex are going to be brought together in particular kinds of ways. So in turning Tide Running into a film, I wondered if you wanted to talk about some of those stakes. So those would be some of my questions.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Wow.
Good evening. I guess I would want to, my name is Pat Saunders. I am director of the Caribbean Literary and Cultural Studies Program at the University of Miami. And I actually want to continue with some of what Faith said. I was particularly made, not even uncomfortable. I disagreed with Evelyn's opening claim that we would want to, you know, not talk to the musicians this evening, but to talk to the writers. Because I think there are a number of things I want to say. One is that we need to be cautious about romanticizing where and how within institutional disciplines or even within social structures interventions can be made. I think it was particularly striking that in Onya's reading, the centrality of play, which is one of the first arenas within which we begin to learn what it means to be man, what it means to be woman, what it means to be married, what the responsibilities, that whole scene of preparing dinner and cleaning the house, and the child in this sort of intimate space realizing that because their two friends had already started sexual performances, that it was their then expectation, right? So that there's an extent to which we have to think about that space, the schoolyard, as another place where we begin to understand ourselves as sexual beings, as performed by parents, by ministers, by teachers, et cetera. So I think that's one place. The other, I think that's also important, is that of material culture, of which literature is one part. We cannot lose sight of the fact, Big Bubby Barbie, Ken Doll, Cindy, Mashup Midge, that these characters, as it were, become a kind of, if you will, safe space for children to begin to experiment with their sexuality before they themselves begin to try on the attire of sexual beings. So again, literature provides us one place of doing that, but I wouldn't want to institute it primarily as the space where it takes place. And I would also want us to think about the way, going back to Onya's reading, the interesting statement that film is where reality takes place. And for many children, that is where they begin to understand themselves as beings in the world, sexual beings, political beings, etc. And I would put alongside that music, right? Because in many ways, this is how they learn how sexuality is performed, linguistically, through dress, all of the things that Onya talks about in her reading. And I would want to return to dancehall culture as my own interest in my scholarly work and in the dance hall as a place that has a lot to teach us. It is remarkably ironic to me that in Thomas's reading, that a gay brown Jamaican man who gives voice to his erotic dream about a black working class making love, or fucking a black, excuse my French for the children in the audience, a black working class man does so in the language of dancehall music. Read me. I mean, this is, and does so in a very misogynistic kind of way, right? That he, I mean, there's so much going on there that suggests to me that dancehall culture is always already there, and there's a way in which we for ill or good. And I think it's also interesting that he's a middle-class man using the lyrics, if you will, or the language of the dance hall as a way of envisioning his sexual eroticism in relation to this black working-class man. So I feel like there, to center literature is to miss an opportunity to read all of these other homosocial spaces that young people, young adults, and adults begin to understand themselves as sexual beings. And I think that to suggest that literature is not in dialogue with the musicians, I mean, I think is to also forget that all of these dance hall lyrics we hear are written, whether we want to call it the big L literature or whether you call it writing or not. I was once heard Tanya Stevens talk about the fact that there was someone who wrote a song for her that essentially the lyrics were Minaya no licky licky, this whole anti-oral sex rhetoric. And on stage, she's like, all right, yeah, I sing this song all the time. But personally, right? You know, my outside man, Musiam, right? That is a man that, and I mean, so we have to be mindful of the way in which performance is such an integral part of how we engage with the popular. And so I feel like that is the conversation that, as someone trained in literature, who is constantly looking and thinking about the way that literature is yet to catch up with the popular culture, that we would do well to sort of lessen that divide and to understand that there's an ongoing dialogue across these disciplinary boundaries and across and even in between, as Faith said, there are ways in which Beanie Man, the church, and even some of the more Capleton and the other righteous, conscious vibes artists speak with one voice in one regard and then are diametrically opposed in others. And I think that those are occasions for us to really reflect on these unusual bedfellows, all pun intended, particularly where the state, the church, and the Rastaman meet, and in other ways where they diverge. So I think that I would want to stop there. Thank you.
Thank you.